Hello, everybody. Welcome and good afternoon. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on where to find the best collectors. Collectors are a different breed, and it takes a special set of skills to be a good collector. So finding individuals with those skills is not always an easy task. In today's webinar, we're joined by a panel of experts from the credit collection industry who are with us to share their strategies for finding the best collectors. Especially as the industry starts to ramp up for income tax season, this webinar is not to be missed. So thanks for joining us. This webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts awesome webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the credit and collection industry. The site is free for anyone to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope everyone will spend a few minutes every day checking out what it's got to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Jessica Andriola is the Vice President of Talent Management for ERC and oversees the company's domestic recruiting and global leadership development. Before joining the ERC family more than a decade ago, she worked in the real estate field, specializing in sales and marketing for developers. Seeing the growth potential in the credit collection and call center industry and the company she started as, she started as an agent with ERC and have held positions in the talent management, talent development, and leadership development departments throughout her tenure. Alan Clayton is the Chief Operations Officer at FrostArtNet. He is responsible for all facets of operations, including first-party, third-party, and shared services for the company's offices in Nashville, Campbellsville, and Houston. Alan has more than 30 years of customer service, collection, and project management experience in a variety of fields, including healthcare, credit cards, nearshore outsourcing, regular outsourcing, and insurance. Mike Hiller is the Vice President of Collections for American Profit Recovery. He joined APR more than a decade ago as an entry-level employee. He is a licensed collection manager in Michigan and serves as a subject matter expert for the State Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we will get to them when the discussion is concluded, and we may take a couple as the discussion is ongoing, depending on what people are asking questions about. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available later today on AccountsRecovery.net's webinar recordings page. Finally, I want to ask everyone to reserve a minute and please fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over today. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Participating in the survey and sharing your feedback helps me develop content that's what you're looking for and find speakers, much like the ones we have with us today, who are the people you absolutely need to be hearing from. With that, we can move on to the most important part of today's webinar, and that's the conversation and discussion with our panelists. So first, let me start with the broadest possible question I can think of. Mike Hiller, what have you found to be the best source for finding new collectors?
Oh, yeah, we just run an ad that says, teaching not cracked up to what you thought it would be. Apply here. No, I joke.
And then you
because,
just have to beat them away with a stick.
Yeah, nice. Right? Yeah, and they come flocking in. No, I joke because, you know, teachers, anyone who can manage a classroom full of 30 kids is pretty good at managing a single phone call. So that's kind of been my my latest and greatest success stories have been teachers. But no, I would say career fairs. So they've been a good resource for us. They're a lot of work. And they're worth it. You know, both the career fairs that co-op with colleges and those that operate independently, we've found to be great resources as of late.
Absolutely. I would definitely agree with that. And for ERC, one of our best sources have been referrals. And, you know, because each company definitely has a culture of its own, and through our referrals, you know, as people come in, referrals have already talked to them about ERC or culture. If they're new to collections, about collections and their experience so far. So for us, one of our best sources have been our referrals and our referral program that we have.
I would agree with those as well. The job fairs are great. The referrals are great. You know, we get some definitely still from Indeed and a place called Better Teams. That's a job aggregator, kind of like Indeed. So we're throwing a broad net there as well. We've tried social media sites. That hasn't worked. We haven't tried the teacher thing yet. I might have to do that here. We've got quite a few teachers here in Nashville. We've even had some of our folks, our senior folks, will carry their business cards around, and somebody gives them good service at a restaurant or a retail store. Heck, we've been known to give business cards and say, look us up and send in an application. You're just the kind of person we're looking for. So there's a lot of different things that we've gone after and used.
Yeah, Mike,
I would agree with sorry, Jessica, go right ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, no, that's an excellent point. We have referral cards that we have that, you know, are open to anybody to carry around. And so when they do have good service or come across somebody with that personality, they can write their name down, hand it off to them, and that way that person can use that information when applying.
Yeah, you're right about referrals. Last I checked, APR is right around 40%. Of our staff has come from referrals. So what we do to incentivize this is we've got a bonus for anyone who refers someone. And then throughout the year, there's different bonuses. And then at the end of the year, during our awards ceremony, anyone who's referred an existing employee, we throw their name in a hat and send them to Vegas for 4 days and three nights, vacation paid for two. So we take our referrals seriously too. And that's been a great resource for us as well.
Nice.
I think I'm going to write that one down.
Yeah, you got to watch out, though, because you send them to Vegas. You kind of wonder if they're going to come back sometimes. But
hey, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, right. And then I would agree with Alan that Indeed seems to be pulling ahead of the pack insofar as website-based recruiting models are concerned. We've had a lot of success with Indeed. And they've got a lot of value-added things that they do insofar as, the candidates filling out different metrics and things like this. One thing I would add, too, is don't run a help wanted ad on Craigslist. I mean, it's like going to a dive bar looking for a spouse. I wouldn't recommend it.
I would agree there.
Yeah, we tried that as well, and big time bad.
Then you sober up and you realize the person you hired is not who you thought.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I found some of my best spouses on Craigslist. I'm curious, with all of these ideas, and I think they're all awesome, and I want to sort of dig into to each of them as we go through our discussion, is there a difference between hiring for a collector position versus hiring for, you know, a sort of an admin position or some other office position within an agency that's not a collector, in terms of using these different options? Or do you sort of cast the same net regardless of what type of position you're looking for?
Well, for ERC, I mean, collector is different than an admin type position. So whereas like a LinkedIn, we may use more for what we consider our back office or corporate roles. However, it hasn't had the same return for an agent position as we have for our back office positions. So that's one that we would use for different positions other than collectors that necessarily hasn't worked for collectors for us.
Yeah, it depends on the type of job. We've got some good relationships with some good technical recruiters. So for folks like our IT folks, which are hard to find sometimes, we'll reach out there. Certainly we'll use LinkedIn. Certainly we'll use Indeed also. I mean, there's lots of, you know, throwing out a wide net on those. The key is making sure you're following up quickly. But as far as collectors go, sometimes we'll have people not even answer the phones after they've applied to a job for even for a phone screen. So sometimes the challenges are just getting people to answer the phone. If we can get a phone screen in, we've had people not show up for a face-to-face interview. So some of the challenges is making sure that we're actually getting the right people even coming in the door straight away.
Agreed.
So you're using the same sources for the most part to find, sort of to bring applicants in the door. But then I guess sort of, you know, once you start to kind of screen them and interview them and talk to them or see what their interests are, that's maybe where sort of, you know, there's a different path for people who are potential collectors versus, you know, other positions that you're trying to fill within a company. Is that right?
Yeah, for ERC, we post all of our positions separately. So all of our collector agent positions, all of our back office positions, and work them from a, you know, as they come in applicant-wise. However, if there are positions from a back office perspective that, you know, have been filled already, we'll definitely reach out if they fit the profile for a collector to gauge their interest in starting their career in collections. Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of our back office folks too, not necessarily the higher level people, but more of the other types of roles that are back office, client liaisons and so on, those will be typically filled for us anyway from within. People will be on the phone, they're tired of being on the phone, but they've shown a good work ethic and we know them and we can see what kind of work they're able to do. So we'll post all of our roles both internally and externally, just in case there's somebody inside that is interested in the position. They also might know their neighbor, friend, so on and so forth, who would be interested in it. So we want to give that referral every chance it possibly can get.
Got it. Okay, excellent. Jessica, you mentioned the collector profile, and I'm curious to, you know, see if you could share sort of, you know, what you're looking for, that, you know, someone who would fit the profile of a potential collector.
Sure, absolutely. I think, you know, it's changed slightly a little bit through the years, whereas we used to possibly just focus on, you know, sales experience, you know, other collections experience, call center experience. Now to us for ERC, you know, definitely looking at that application and looking at job history and longevity and things like that and experience that they bring to the table is important. But for us, we want to talk to as many people as possible. It's just like collections itself, recruiting. It's a contact sport, right? The more contacts you make, the better your chances are to collect. So when we, you know, get the applicant on the phone, it's really that personality, you know, that profile. Are, you know, are they easy to talk to? If I were, you know, a consumer, how comfortable would I be talking to this person? How comfortable would I be handing over my credit card information, my checking account information, things like that? And then also too, that interest in ERC itself and the collections industry itself, you know, were we just one of 15 to 20 people or companies that they applied for, or, you know, when we talked to them, like, oh, they were able to answer questions about the job posting or ERC itself. So from the profile perspective, it's really that personality. And again, you know, a good job history. However, we're looking now for a can you instead of have you, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, Jessica, when you were talking, all I could think of was bingo when you said it's a numbers game. I mean, it is. You know, that when I looked at our last hiring campaign, we hired two collectors. We started with 150 applications. We conducted 85 phone screens, scheduled 24 first-round interviews and 4 second interviews, and offered 2 jobs. It's absolutely 100% a numbers game. That's well said.
Were you looking to fill 2 positions? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Were you looking to fill 2 positions, Mike, or is that just the ones that ended up making the cut?
I was looking to fill as many positions as qualified candidates we interview. It just happened to be two.
Yeah, we've seen the same type of thing. It's a severe degradation in the numbers once you start looking just at resumes. We have had a good experience actually from different sources. We've had some people that are very successful. If they're good in a retail environment, they're good talking to people. They're good talking in on dealing with possibly issues with people in a restaurant even. We've had good luck with people that are able to think on their feet, able to be pleasant, able to recover if there's a concern. So it's been a variety of things, and it really has been linked to the individual as opposed to what have you done. But to what Jessica said, can you do that? So I think that's very well said.
And Alan, you mentioned no-shows. You know, you schedule an interview, and maybe they fill out the application, and they don't even come in for the interview. What we found when we started talking to candidates, whether we're interested in them or not, we've got them in the interview. So let's do some digging. So we'll ask them about, you know, what they did when they got off the phone and these things. And what we found is they're going right to Google as soon as they hang up the phone. They're going to Glassdoor. They're going to YouTube. So what we've done after we found this out is we encourage it now. So we end our phone screen. We set someone up for an interview. We want to interview them, and we're pushing them right to social media. Hey, check us out online. You know, it always makes for a better interview. We're going to ask you some questions about it when you come in. So we try to control that as much as we can, and really encourage them to go to the sites that we know they're going to anyway.
Excellent. Well, at this point, I'd just like to hit the pause button on our discussion briefly. And I'd like to invite Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning, the sponsor for today's webinar, to say a few words. Chris?
Thank you, Mike, and hello, everyone. We're grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides Knowledge Source, a web-based employee education and compliance training application to companies in the collection industry. Knowledge Source is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees. Our clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high level of assurance. Their staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge expected of them when interacting with consumers. Knowledge Source automatically builds documentation of the compliance training efforts of the company for existing and prospective clients and for regulators. For those of you I don't know or haven't met, I've spent most of my career on your side of the desk. I've worked in the collection industry for more than 30 years, most of that time in an executive management position at a collection firm. Knowledge Source was created to address many of the shortcomings in training and compliances that I saw as COO and CEO. Use Knowledge Source to implement an ongoing continuous training cycle for reinforcing the knowledge you expect staff members to have before it begins to fade from memory. Present collection, client, or company policies to your staff members during onboarding training and at ongoing recurring schedules where they acknowledge they have read and understand those policies. Present tests during training events to validate learning and on recurring schedules to certify staff knowledge in areas you wish, such as the FDCPA, HIPAA, or other important areas. Use Knowledge Source during training events to present videos, slideshows, audio recordings, followed by a set of questions to validate participation and learning. In summary, Knowledge Source will close knowledge gaps, promote accountability, lower the cost of training, document for prospective and existing clients, regulators, or auditors your company's proactive role in preventing compliance nonconformities. To find out more, please visit us at peakrevenuelearning.com. Thank you.
Awesome. Excellent. Thanks, Chris, and thanks again to Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Really appreciate your continued support.
I want to Hey, Mike, if you don't mind, we got a question. Do you mind if I jump to that?
I was just going to do that, Mike. But
see? Hey, we're on the same wavelength. I've been watching a lot of Gary Vee, so I'm big on the Q&A right now. So the question says, do any of the panelists utilize pre-employment collector aptitude testing? And if so, what company do they utilize to perform the tests? I think it's a great question. So we've added self-assessments to our onboarding, our screening process. It's offered by a company called Omni Group. We're in no affiliation, but I can tell you I've checked out the reliability and validity scores, and I haven't found anyone that beats their Kronbach Alpha scores. So they're not only testing what they think they're testing, it's reliable and valid. So we're just scratching the surface with these guys. We've built our own baseline as far as candidates are concerned. And Mike, maybe I didn't think of this offline, but now that I've got it on my brain, I'm just going to say it. You might want to hit them up. They might be interested in sponsoring a webinar too. They're a legitimate company, real nice people. So Omni Group is the name of the place. And we did not hire them so much to accommodate for, you know, low unemployment rates, which we're all seeing. If anything, our screening process is more rigorous than it's ever been. But we have recruited them for exactly what the panelists or the Q&A here says is the aptitude in screening testing is exactly what we're using it for, is on the front end.
Excellent. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for the idea as well. Alan,
never know.
Jessica, anything you want to add on top of Mike's answer about pre-employment collector aptitude testing?
Yeah, currently right now, our pre-employment testing is more from a skills-based testing. Just as far as, you know, inbound call center, debt collector type positions. However, we, you know, have definitely, and I heard the scratch the surface, beginning to, you know, start to put that profile together from an ERC perspective, you know, culturally looking for that, what I call total package, you know, looking at our agents and going, okay, you know, who's got the behavior, who has the attendance, who has the KPIs, that total package to be able to really start to bring that, you know, artificial intelligence into our recruiting platform as well. So don't think we're as far along. However, from a skills base, we use eSkill testing, and we are looking at vendors for that more aptitude testing.
And we're not currently using pre-employment testing. We do some internal little bits before they come in for, or when they come in for their face-to-face, make sure they've actually seen a keyboard before, can actually use a keyboard, those kinds of things. We've struggled with that in the past sometimes, but I'm definitely taking some notes on these, so something to look at. Thank you for those.
Excellent. Let's stay on this. We talked a little bit about how to get applicants in the door and some of the different sources that work. Once you have, you know, somebody either who's submitted an application or mailed in a resume, you've identified them, they fit the profiles, maybe someone who might be a possible collector and might fit. What's the process then? You know, how do you sort of go about determining whether this person, you know, actually does have the potential to be a collector? I'm wondering if, you know, if you guys can walk through the process briefly. Jessica, if you don't mind starting.
Sure, absolutely. You know, after their application comes into our applicant tracking system and we move that application on to the next step, it's a phone screen. It's a phone interview. We reach out to them to see, you know, if they answer the phone, say, hey, is this a good time? Or, you know, would you like to schedule a time for us to call you back? I mean, so we have that phone screen or phone interview where, again, we're looking, you know, is that person focused on the phone? We gave them, you know, the opportunity to say, hey, is this a good time? Or would you like us to call you back? So, you know, are they, you know, are they being easily distracted? How is their, you know, how is their tone and things, and how responsive are they to our questions? So it starts with phone interview for us. And then after that, that's when, if we would like to see them face-to-face, we bring them in for pre-employment testing at that point, and then face-to-face interview.
We do something very similar, and up to that point, and I mean, almost identical. Part of the face-to-face interview that we do, we actually incorporate a job sampling for about the first 20 minutes of their interview. We sit them with a collector. We've had them sign a HIPAA release and so on to make sure they're not going to release any PHI, but we'll have them sit with the collector. And the first question that will come back when they come to the manager for the interview is that a job you can see yourself doing for 40 hours a week? And if the answer is no, then thank you for your time. We appreciate it. If it's yes, then we'll continue on. So their first test, in a way, or one of their first tests, is looking and seeing themselves doing that job. And so we've had a number of people self-select out, and I don't have any problem with that. I would rather them say that and say, nah, I can't do that, versus, oh, yeah, and then not show up or do other things. So that's absolutely one of the things we've done as well that's helped out.
You know, and I'm glad that you brought that up. We do as well, do it side by side. And I think, you know, there's questions that we ask in our first round interview. But also too, something that we incorporate for our recruiters is for them to not just set it and forget it, as far as that side by side goes, but to definitely pay attention from a distance. As to, you know, what that applicant is doing. Are they, you know, their body language, are they leaned in? Are they engaged? Or are they kind of, you know, leaned back in their chair and just off and looking around? So how seriously are they taking the opportunity, you know, to have that curtain pulled back a little bit for them?
Well, we hit a vein here with our current discussion. We've got a bunch of questions that have come in. A couple of them specifically asking, what are the questions that you're asking during the pre-screen phone call, or what are some of the knockout questions that you consider that work for each of the panelists? Anyone want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, I'll jump in with you know, some of the questions we ask during a phone screen. There's no wrong question. I just want to get them talking. You know, I want to see how well they can think on their feet. I want to ask them things like, you know, because so I'm picturing someone, you know, maybe they've got a job already and they're cyber slacking at work, just clicking around, applying to jobs. But if I ask them a question like, why were you interested in our position? And they don't know what the heck they applied for. Maybe I got to dig a little deeper. That doesn't mean I'm not going to invite someone in for an interview, but I want to pay attention to things like that. And pretty much, you know, you can ask them the typical stuff, what they're expecting. You know, tell me a little bit about your prior experiences. Tell me about your knowledge, skills, and abilities. You know, things like that. But at the end of the day, I want to get that person talking. I want to see if they can carry on a cogent conversation. I want to see if I can understand them and if they speak clearly. And I go from there. I don't put a whole lot into the phone screen. I want to try to find a reason to get someone in here and have a face-to-face. But if they fail terribly, it just ain't gonna work out. So really, the phone screen isn't, you know, I talked earlier about, you know, starting with 150 applications and 85 phone screens and only 24 first round interviews. Well, that's not because we omitted 60 people on a phone screen because they couldn't talk very well. It means that they screen themselves out sometimes. And sometimes it means that we screen them out as well. But the important part is having that conversation over the phone might take 5 or 10 minutes, as opposed to having 85 interviews that are going to take an hour apiece.
Yeah, absolutely agree. You know, our phone interview process, you know, just like yours, is to really get them talking and to find out what they, you know, actually know about the position, you know, in ERC itself. So it's really to see, you know, how they sound on the phone. If they are, you know, currently employed and they've applied with us, we definitely want to know, like, hey, you know, why are you looking, you know, to leave your current position? Yeah. You know, is definitely a question that we asked, or that we ask. If they aren't currently employed, then, you know, asking them why they left their previous position. That really helps us kind of dig into cultural fit sometimes too. And, you know, and the key with anything with interviewing is, to get that person talking, because a lot of times they're going to answer questions that you didn't even know you had, just by making them comfortable and getting them talking on the phone.
Yeah, I agree with that too, Jessica. And really, you got to think of the interviewing and the hiring all as part of a singular process in each component. So the phone screen is one component. So we're on a phone screen. We want to set someone up for an interview. We get the date and time, and then we're going to give them some instructions, right? So are they behind the phone just, okay, whatever, or are they taking rigorous notes and, you know, they're really out there making, interviewing their job until they get a job. And so at the end of the phone screen, we're going to give them some instructions, you know, check us out online, makes for a better conversation, yada, 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 yada. Well, what do you think the first thing we do when we come in and sit down for a first interview is? Ask them, so you checked us out online, what did you find? Mm-hmm. And they'll rattle off X, Y, Z. And then I followed up, what else? What else? Anything else? Until they can't answer those questions any longer. And you get a really good idea. Did they just click around a couple times? Did they not look you up at all? Or are they referencing like people's names in different YouTube videos? Like that's someone who's engaged. That's going to be a much better interview, regardless if we ask them to come back for a second round interview or not. It's just going to be a much more enjoyable interview, and it's going to tell you something about that person right away. And then one other thing I wanted to mention, you guys do side-by-sides, which is awesome. I think it's great. We call that a realistic job preview. We don't have people sit in, but the realistic job preview has caught a lot of momentum, at least the past decade. And we do the tour, so we walk them around each department. And inevitably, here's what happens is someone from the staff will say hi or good morning or how's it going. You know, when they're sitting in the lobby, they get that same experience. Good morning, good to see you, and they just get a real good feel of the culture right away. And when we bring people back for seconds, here's part of the bigger process and the follow-through, right? When we bring them back for the second interview, we ask, why were you interested in coming back? What's interested you about the job? And 9 out of 10 people say the culture, the people. Everyone's so friendly. It's unlike other places that I've interviewed at.
One of the questions on here is, what are some of the knockout questions? One of the ones that we'll ask if we see somebody has call center experience is, tell me about your experience in the call center. And if they say, well, I just don't do well in production environments, kind of gives you a clue that maybe not. Or if they, the last three places they've gone and they've blamed their supervisor or manager for being bad supervisors and managers, for them not being able to do their job, kind of gets to their attitude as well, as far as that goes. So really, again, as everybody mentioned, really trying to get them to talk. And the more they talk, the more you can hear the good and the bad. And that's what we're trying to do, trying to teach our managers and supervisors that they should be letting the applicant talk 80-90% of the time on the interviews.
Absolutely. Definitely a lot of tell me about a time, describe a situation when, to prompt that kind of back and forth, not just that, yes and no.
Yep. Yeah, the more open-ended it can be, the better.
I always remember, you see these scenarios where there's someone being interviewed for, let's say, a sales job, and the interviewer hands the person a pen, and it's like, sell me this pen. So I'm curious, do any of you actually ask someone to sort of try and collect from you? Sort of go through, some sort of mock collection during any of the stages where you're looking to hire them? Is that something you ask them to do to see how they sort of attack that opportunity?
Yes, we do. We do it twice, if I can jump in here. So Mike, during the first interview, we'll do a role play. And it's a scenario where, the person claims they want to pay, but they have to get off the phone for various reasons. And we kind of role play, how they would handle that. And it's really, really interesting, the various responses you get. You get the, okay, I'll call you back in an hour or whatever, and then you explain after the role play is over that, what do you think is going to happen when you call back? They're going to ignore the call, right? And then on the other end of the spectrum, you get the people that are, right, yeah, exactly, you're already blocked. It doesn't take any time with the apps today. The other end of the spectrum is they're, really, really pushy. And they almost forget they're in an interview. So you get a lot of good feedback from that type of situation. And then during the second interview, we open the floor up and we say, what do you want us to know about you? Which is basically a way of saying, sell me yourself, right? But we give them the first 10 or 15 minutes to really tell us everything about themselves that they couldn't sneak into a behaviorally based question, but they really wanted us to know. That's the stuff that I want to know.
Yeah, absolutely. During our first round interview, we do ask questions as, what types of questions would you ask someone, that you're calling to collect from? Just one, to kind of see where their head's at. And then in that second round interview, that's when we introduce that role play. And it's, hey, Jessica, I hear you. I know I owe the bill. I'm not saying that I don't owe the bill. I absolutely do. I'm not arguing that fact. But, financially right now, I can't pay that, and just see where they go from there.
Excellent. Question that came in. Do you make your phone screen questions different from the in-person interview questions, or do you ask the same questions during each stage?
Ours are different.
Ours are definitely more in-depth, but there are things that we will go over again just to be sure we're hearing the same answers both times. And sometimes you get more verbosity from people when they're face to face. So there's a few things that we will go into more depth on, but they're definitely different.
Yeah, our questions are different as well. I think our phone screen is more open-ended to get them talking, and then the interviews are more specific to kind of drill down into some of the areas. But I can tell you the one thing we ask during a phone screen, a first interview, second interview, is about the background checks. I can't tell you how many people give you one answer during a phone screen and another answer during a first or second interview. So we make it clear that, any positions is contingent on a background check, both financial and criminal. Is there anything that would prohibit you from being licensed to collect in any state? And that's just a huge time saver right there.
Ding, 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 ding. Same at ERC.
We also do a drug check, so it's a little interesting there too.
Okay. We've talked to Alan. You've mentioned experience a couple of times, one retail and one asking if they've had, if they worked at a call center before. I'm curious, do you find that how much does previous experience have an impact on whether or not somebody gets hired or ultimately ends up succeeding as a collector?
I tell you, we've had different results across the board, and it really depends on the person from what we've seen. Some folks will have been at other companies, and you've got to unteach bad habits, or not necessarily even bad habits, but that's not how we do it here. And so it really does depend. We have seen that experience on the phones or, again, face-to-face with people in any capacity is helpful. My company, we have a mix of first-party and third-party, so it's not just third-party traditional collection, but we've also got about half our business is first-party customer service. So those are definitely different personality types as well. So typically, if somebody is not as assertive as we might need on the third party side, they might have customer service side. So we're always looking to see a good fit for people. We've got a shared services group that does back office things like bankruptcy and deceased. So some folks that might not be as good on the phone. So a lot of times we can find, based on people's experiences, we're able to find different jobs that might be a good fit for them. But it is very much how much the individual's willing to work and stay focused. But again, I've had luck with people from Burger King, and I've had luck with people that have come from other companies just like ours. I've also had some spectacular failures in both. So I wish there was a magic bullet on that one.
I know. I think that's one of the coolest things and one of the most frustrating things is you never know where your next great bill collector could come from. Because it is, a lot, of it is based on that kind of drive and personality. I know, something that, you know, we're experiencing right now, you know, with some of our less seasoned applicants that will come through, is not giving themselves enough time to be good at it. So, you know, something, you know, if they're not good right off the bat, then the thought process is, oh, well, this just must not be for me, and on to the next. Whereas, you know, a few years ago, there was a little bit more time and effort put into it before making the decision, well, I wasn't, you know, great at it during my first 2 weeks, so I'm gonna, you know, peace out and on to the next.
Yeah, we've recently implemented something that has been really helpful for us. We do the traditional classroom training, but then after that, we're doing something we call the train lane, which is essentially the trainee will come out of the classroom and then spend the next however long it takes, really. Well, we've got a specific plan, but a lot of one-on-one attention with a trainer slash manager, or I'm sorry, supervisor, who does nothing but work with new people, new trainees, as well as people in the first 90 days. The goal is to get them to where they're comfortable on the phones, because that classroom training, we have found, doesn't do enough to get somebody practicing. Just like that second baseman, you got to take a lot of ground balls in spring training, and you still do lots of practice. We're trying to do that up front, and the comments we're getting back are, I don't know how I could possibly have ever been on the phone without this process. So that's proven to be well worth the investment that we're putting into that.
Yeah, I like that. It's about a 1.5 week classroom, and then they take calls in the training environment, and then they mm-hmm. move out to nesting on the floor where their trainer moves out with them for a week. But we also do have some programs along the way to pull, you know, people back in and get them comfortable and back to the basics as well.
We have begun not letting them on real live calls until they have been certified by their trainer or training supervisor. So it's really been helpful, because there's so many different things that can come up. And, you know, if that first call is, you know, that consumer, then, you might get somebody not even come back from lunch that day. So, and we've had that. So we're trying to make sure they not only are prepared, but they have a better feeling of preparedness.
Nice.
We had a question come in about pay scale for collectors, average pay range and turnover rate. Now, I don't expect anybody to share, but you're more than willing to share as many details as you're willing to in that area, if anybody is willing to do so.
30 to 60 grand.
$1 million.
How many years?
Yeah, I think from a pay scale perspective, we actually do have a pay scale at ERC. We won't necessarily get into dollar figures, but things that we take into consideration is that person's experience. How many years of experience are they, you know, do they have? And that could be sales experience, not just necessarily third-party collections experience. So, you know, we definitely, you know, do give credit for that. What's their job history been like? What was their interview score? These are things that we take into consideration when we, and you know, on our pay scale when we are determining what that pay is going to be.
Yep, we have a collector 1, 2, and 3. 1 being somebody with really no experience, and we're going to teach them everything. We're going to teach them everything anyway. But collector 2 and 3, a little more experience, and collector 3 has got a lot of experience, and they're expecting more of a pay. So. And they should be able to pick it up sooner and faster and be able to produce a lot faster. So that's something that we've also been doing. And each of those has their own pay scale.
Now, let me ask you guys this. Are you doing, so maybe Alan, so your collectors 1, 2, and 3, are those just different base pays with the same commission threshold, or how does that work?
Yeah, same base, different base pay, exact same commission base. You still have to earn your commission.
Right. Makes sense.
Excellent. Okay. Just a reminder, we just have a 10 or 15 minutes left. If you have any, if anybody has any questions, now's probably your best time to enter it into the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel, and we'll try and get to it before the end of our discussion. We talked a little bit about how at least the sense I'm getting is that it's definitely a lot harder these days to try and find qualified collectors. So first, anyone can absolutely correct me if I'm wrong, but if I'm not wrong, and it is harder, is it just the you just have to cast a wider net, and you know, like you said, it's a numbers game, and just try and get more people in the door? Or what other recommendations do you have for agencies to try and fight through this difficulty to find collectors?
Yeah, we're
Go ahead, Alan. Sorry.
That's fine. We're spending a lot of time and energy and programs retaining staff. I mean, we've gone to a relaxed dress code where if somebody can wear jeans any day they want if they're pairing it with our company gear. We're doing a lot of flexible scheduling. So, you know, we got a lot of single moms that work for us, and Johnny gets sick and the mom's got to go home. Well, if you get your 40 in during the work week, we're not worried about it so much. We even have a van pool. We've got a significant number of people that live on the opposite side of town, and we've got such a concentration there that we've been able to work with a commuter group here in town and got a van. So it's a van pool. So there's a lot of things we're doing to try to retain staff. I mean, we've got a Halloween committee that's going up all over the place coming up for next month that they're already starting to work through. So we know that they've got one of the toughest jobs that we have in our company. In fact, I say frequently that our collectors have the toughest job in our company because they're talking to people about their money all day. So if we can get them to tolerate the job but love the people they work with and love the company and what we're trying to do, then maybe we don't have to hire quite so many people.
I think that's exactly right. I think the low employment's had a larger impact on retention than hiring. I think our hiring is pretty close to the way it's been. You know, it's not statistically significant enough to say that we're feeling an impact there. But they're really two opposite sides of the same coin, right? I mean, you've got the front end with all the hiring, and then obviously the back end with the retention, and that's really where we've seen it too. And that's from a perspective of we're looking for college graduates. So, you know, we're looking for, you know, people with educations. And I had mentioned the self-assessments and things like that, but really two great predictors of job performance are IQ. So there's your graduates from colleges, higher education, and resilience. Someone that's able to get through 4 years of college, whatever the obstacles they faced, kind of fits both bills for us. And so that's our perspective, is we're looking for college grads. It doesn't mean I'm not going to hire someone with an associate's or someone right out of high school. That's not what that means. It just means that our preferred hire has a four-year degree.
Are you seeing those kind of folks asking for more money?
We have, yes. To which I reply, you can make as much as you want. we do offer things like flex time. We do offer things, just exactly what you were describing, Alan, with the flexibility. I think those are very important for retention. But then we've got a pretty aggressive, compensation model. And number two, we try to fast track those that fit the bill. And what I mean by that is we're looking for college-educated people. We've got our supervisor manager positions that we want to get them into those positions that, much like your collector 1, 2, 3, it comes with a bit more money on the base side, and then our commission side is much the same.
I think from an ERC perspective, we are looking, like I said, just even outside of industries that we've been, honed into in the past. We're open to good job history and a good attitude, no matter the experience. So somebody brings with them, we're of the mindset, that's what we have our interviewing and testing for and our awesome training program. So is to be able to talk to as as many people as possible to see, you know, who's going to be that fit for us. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes even all of the things that we do go through, never know someone till you marry them, eventually. So, you know, sometimes we still go around banging our head up against the wall. You know, that's where we are, you know, right now. Again, you know, the success stories, I think too, you know, for ERC as a company, you know, most of, and I'm sure, you know, with American Profit, Ross Arnett as well, is we do a lot of our promotion from within. So we do have a career pathing program. And when somebody does, you know, go into a leadership position, we do have a leadership development department as well. And so I think that is key for retention for the people that you do bring through, is that they can see, oh, you know, this company does have things put in place where they're continuing to develop me, which I think is key and very, very important.
Yeah. Do I see a future here? And I think, Jessica, what you just said speaks to one of the questions we had about, you know, the agencies in this person's area are highly concentrated. What do they do to set themselves apart? I think attitude is everything. And as cliche as it sounds, it's a cliche for a reason. And what I mean by that is, if you want to set yourself apart, focus on culture. And what does that mean, right? What does it mean to focus on culture? Well, Mike, I'm going to do it. I'm going to curse. There's a book called The No Asshole Rule. Hopefully that was in good taste.
Yay.
Read it. It speaks to culture. And what I mean by that is, someone with a positive attitude, I can work with them all day long. I can train them up. We can do the things we need to do to make sure they're successful at the job. Someone with a negative attitude who's your best performer, fire them. Fire them yesterday. It's not worth it. And it's such a relief when you just got to cut ties. You just have to. If you take nothing else away from what I've said, please do that.
Yep.
I'm gonna make you cuss again. What was the name of that book?
The No Asshole Rule.
Oh, okay.
Yes. You got it right.
Yeah, we do.
A success now.
Yeah, we do some similar things. We've got what we call our supervisor in training program. So not only existing supervisors and managers receive continual training to improve their skills, we've identified some high performer types. I have put them through a 6-month training class. I'm looking to do that about every 12 to 18 months. You can't keep getting new people that quickly, but that's been very well received. It's given us a lot of our next generation of supervisors, so that's been very helpful as well. So again, as you guys said, investing in the people so they see a future is very critical. Hardly anybody grew up in kindergarten said on their thing what they want to do when they grow up is, I want to be a bill collector. So the more we can get them to seeing a future for them, the better.
Yeah, that's right. And then one of the things is, you know, we got tax time around the season. So I'm asked quite frequently, you know, do you hire a bunch of collectors right before tax time? And the answer to that is no, we don't. I'm not a big fan of layoffs. I don't like that philosophy. If that's what you do, that's fine. But what we do is we offer incentives, and hopefully this speaks to another question on the board here. So we offer incentives. So we have unlimited overtime. And we love to incentivize that. I want the collectors who are here making more money. I want them to feel incentivized by working more hours. So instead of hiring two more collectors, if I can get, you know, 30 collectors to work a few more hours of overtime, I'm already making up for the fact that I don't have to hire two collectors. As far as PTO and vacation sick time, it's all one bucket for us. No, we don't cash it out at the end of the year, but we do roll it over to the next year. So hopefully that answers that question, at least in part.
We do allow a cash out. It's been a good thing for people's Christmas bills.
There you go. And we also don't have part-time employees, not at this time.
Neither do we. We do not have part-time collectors either.
We have actually been offering some part-time collectors in both of our third party and our first party. We've got some folks that have temporary, especially there's a lot of times they'll be more of a temporary type of a situation. They need to go part-time for the summer, or they need to go part-time for some particular life event, and we've been able to accommodate those instead of losing them.
Thanks, Mike, for bringing up tax time, because it leads me to my question. I'm curious what the window or the time frame is from when someone applies to when they get hired, going through that process, the phone screen, the interviews. How long does it normally take to get someone from application to first day on the job?
So from an ERC perspective, we typically, we have training classes every month, and that is based off of, you know, growth and attrition, just where, mm-hmm. Where we're currently at. You know, with the recruiters that we have on staff, and it's kind of a double-edged sword, but you do need to move quickly when people are applying. Especially, your A-plus people that are applying. So someone yep. could apply today and be on the phone with a recruiter this afternoon, and depending on how that goes, have an interview set up for tomorrow. We definitely don't sit on any applications whatsoever, just because it is a hot market. And unfortunately, you are not the only company that they're applying with, so it would not take long at all. So, but we do have a training class every month.
Yeah, you're right. Your best candidates are going to get jobs quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, they're going to get jobs quick. So we try to call right away and kind of get them on the hook. You know, we know they're going to have other interviews, and that's fine. But if we can get them into a first round and we like them and get them scheduled for a second, then we can take a little more time, because we kind of got them on the hook there, and knowing that we're going to schedule a second, let them have a few days to get prepared, which is usually week two, by the way. So they apply, call them right away, screen them, set up a first. Week two is second interview, and then we're going to give about a week before we start someone for the background checks to come back, especially if they've lived in other states. Those typically can take, you know, 5, 6, 7 days, versus if they've lived in the same state their whole life, you can get it back within a day or two. So start to finish, we're looking at 2 weeks would be really good. Usually it's closer to 3.
Yeah, we're similar in that way. We've got multiple offices, and we will typically rotate when we're doing a training class between different offices. So one, our Nashville office might have one this month, our Kentucky office next month. So we focus our recruiting in different areas based on when those classes are going to be.
Excellent. Well, we've just hit the top of the hour, so I'm going to wrap up our discussion. But before I do, Jessica, Alan, Mike, thank you so much for your time and your insights, and for swearing for me today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
This webinar clearly would not have been possible without your participation, so thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I also want to thank Chris Rickman at Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.peakrevenuelearning.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. Really appreciate that. A final reminder to take a minute and fill out the feedback survey for today's webinar to identify future topics and speakers that would be of the most interest and use to you. And I hope everyone stays tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Panel, awesome job. Thank you very much. Excellent, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your day. Take care.